Chapter 20. In the Tuesday, November 9th edition of the New York Journal-American, just below the headline, "Dorothy Kilgallen Dead, Cause Not Determined Yet," were the words, "An autopsy Monday night failed to determine the cause of death. Dr. James Luke, examiner, said further tests would be made." Since the Journal-American reporter directly quoted Dr. Luke, it appears he or she had not examined the documents, but instead secured the quote from the junior medical examiner. Notice Dr. Luke did not disclose what the further tests to be conducted were. There is no mention of either secanol or, more importantly, tuanol being in Kilgallen's system. Due to haphazard media coverage, confusion reigned as to the circumstances surrounding Kilgallen's death. In fact, it was reported that her dead body was discovered twice by different people at two different times. Conflicting accounts continued as newspaper reporters gathered facts filtering in from various sources, many from an anonymous source. Accounts published by the Journal-American on November 9th included the statement, "Kilgallen was found by a maid who went to wake her about noon." A day later, a revised account was published. "Kilgallen was found dead when her hairdresser arrived at 12:45. Reporter Albin Krebs in the New York Herald Tribune stated that the hairdresser, Mark Sinclair, was the one who had discovered Kilgallen's body. Krebs later said, "I'm certain I got the information from a family source, probably the husband." In view of what transpired later, Richard Colmar being the source appears to be impossible, and Mark Sinclair never provided this information. Signed by 19th Precinct Detective John Doyle, the police report, apparently obtained by the Journal-American, stated, "DOA was found by maid Marie Eicher between 12 and 1 p.m., lying on back in bed, clad in night clothes." Another notation read, "Pronounced DOA by Dr. Saul Heller, 11 East 68th Street, medical examiner. Dr. James Luke, present at scene." At the same time, the Journal-American, listing its source as the official autopsy report, published the following information. According to the maid, she went in to awaken deceased at 12 noon and found her unresponsive. This is the exact language from the medical examiner's documents prepared by Dr. Luke. Regardless of how the reporter secured the information, it was incomplete, to the extent of not divulging any details concerning the specific barbiturates Kilgallen ingested, including secanol and tuanol. Otherwise, it's safe to believe the reporter would have printed those details, meaning that he or she either did not actually read the report, or Dr. Luke, either by mistake or intentionally, left out the information about tuanol being present in Kilgallen's bloodstream. Further confusing the issue are the various times quoted as to when Kilgallen's body was discovered. Noon, maid, between 12 and 1 p.m., maid, and 12:45 p.m., Mark Sinclair. In one newspaper account on the 9th, the day after Kilgallen died, Dr. Luke is quoted as saying, "She died between 2 and 4 a.m. Note, there is no indication any maid discovered Kilgallen's body at any time. The New York Times on November 10th printed, "A medical examiner's report stated that Miss Kilgallen died of the effects of a combination of alcohol and barbiturates, neither of which had been taken in excessive quantities." It is unknown whether the Times reporter had ever actually read the entire medical examiner's report, was summarizing, or was simply quoting someone in the medical examiner's office. The exact language, including excessive quantities, is not noted in the medical examiner documents. Thus, the latter seems likely. The death certificate, issued on the same day, included the exact cause of death Dr. Luke specified in the autopsy report. It was signed not by Dr. Luke, but by Dominic DeMayo, M.D. The hour of death is specified in the document. It reads 12 noon. a departure from the medical examiner's autopsy report, 1:40 p.m. On November 15th, 5 days later, the Journal American and New York Post quoted Dr. Luke. He stated, "The death of Dorothy Kilgallen, Journal American columnist and famed TV personality, was contributed to by a combination of moderate quantities of alcohol and barbiturates. The combination caused a fatal depression of the central nervous system." The article also includes, "Dr. Luke declined to name the barbiturate, but said it was a prescription drug taken as a sleeping pill or tranquilizer." What did "contributed to" mean concerning Kilgallen's death? No explanation was provided then or later. The date of this article is the same one included on the autopsy page, where secanol and tuanol are listed, as well as the final cause of death conclusion, including circumstances undetermined. Notice that in the article, Dr. Luke declined to name the barbiturate. Singular, not barbiturates. An outright untruth that he knew to be untrue because of the presence of tuanol. The New York Herald Tribune, in its November 16th issue, stated, "Dr. Luke would not speculate about the form in which Miss Kilgallen had taken the barbiturates. We'd rather leave that up in the air," he said. "We don't want to give that out. Well, just because," he said that combining alcohol and sleeping pills was a common form of accidental death. Miss Kilgallen had taken on moderate amounts of alcohol in the drug before her death, Dr. Luke said. He wouldn't give any figures. Most importantly, while researching her biography of Kilgallen published in the 1970s, author Lee Israel disclosed that she had interviewed a chemist in the New York Medical Examiner's office during a clandestine meeting at a local pub. Apparently protecting her source, Israel did not divulge the chemist's name, instead stating that he was the confidant and right-hand man to Dr. Charles J. Umberger from 1967 to 1972. While noting his reputation for preserving hundreds of toxicology specimens in his laboratory, forensic cryonics, Israel pointed out that Umberger was the NYC Medical Examiner's Office Director of Toxicology in the Department of Pathology at the time of Kilgallen's death. Apparently, he kept bodily fluids in storage in case future scientific breakthroughs might aid in a fresh examination of various causes of death. Retired Dutchess County Sheriff's Office Detective Dennis O'Keefe knew Dr. Umberger. In late 2017, O'Keefe told this author that Dr. Umberger, known to the detectives as Charlie Joe, really knew his stuff. He was very likable, comedic, wore expensive suits that were always wrinkled. Regarding Dr. Umberger's habits, O'Keefe said the doctor was known for saving beakers of bodily fluid specimens in hopes that technology advancements would aid future homicide investigations, as happened in Kilgallen's case. "I remember one time Umberger stored blood samples in our office refrigerator, and one of the guys in the sheriff's office asked Umberger how long a blood sample could be valid, and Umberger said up to 2 years. O'Keefe also stated, based on his experience with cases in New York City, "The whole crew at the NYC Medical Examiner's office was a puzzle." Dr. Umberger died 5 years after retiring in 1972. Regarding the unnamed chemist, Israel said he told her that Umberger strongly suggested Kilgallen had been murdered. A startling revelation, if true, when accidental death was the call of the day. The chemist also said Umberger admitted he had evidence proving the murder, which he kept secret from the Medical Examiner Department of Pathology. In 1968, 3 years after Kilgallen's death, Umberger shared his raw data with the chemist. Dr. Umberger asked him to examine a basic beaker with an extract from Dorothy's brain and another beaker labeled drink. Also apparently provided to the chemist were two glasses which had contained alcoholic beverages, allegedly discovered at Kilgallen's bedside table. Dr. Umberger told the chemist his examination had indicated one was a drink glass from which the alcohol had evaporated, which was hers, Kilgallen's, without indicating how he knew this to be true. In 2007, an article written by Sarah Jordan and published by her father Larry, entitled "Who Killed Dorothy Kilgallen?" appeared in Midwest Today magazine without much fanfare. It was part of a series devoted to celebrities born in the Midwest. Kilgallen was born in Chicago. The well-researched article was a real breakthrough, since it identified the chemist mentioned in Lee Israel's book as John Broich. Admitting he had examined the Kilgallen tissue samples, Broich was quoted as stating that he revealed to Dr. Umberger that the basic beaker contained three dangerous barbiturates, secobarbital sodium, or secanol, pentobarbital sodium, or nembutal, and a combination of secobarbital sodium and amobarbital sodium, or tuinol. This stunning revelation was confirmation of what Dr. Luke had discovered 3 years earlier, secanol and tuinol, but added a third drug to the mix, nembutal, which Dr. Luke did not mention in the medical examiner report. In addition, John Broich reported that a specimen taken from one of the glasses discovered at the death scene and attributed to Kilgallen contained traces of nembutal. No explanation was given as to the examination procedure for determining how it was known alcohol had evaporated from that particular glass. Broich said he presented his discoveries to Dr. Umberger. Broich said the doctor grinned and told him, "Keep it under your hat. It was big." During an audio-taped interview with researcher Catherine Faubel, John Broich described a troubling state of affairs existing in the medical examiner's office in the mid-1960s. He stated, "There was some talk whether Kilgallen's body had been moved and a whole bunch of stuff, but I don't know if it was ever resolved. I do remember that things were kind of screwed up. I think things were probably pretty unreliable. I wouldn't trust anything, you know what I mean?" Broich added, "When I was employed by the medical examiner's office, very few of the people knew what the hell they were doing. I was paranoid as hell when I was there. You never knew what was going to happen from one day to the next. It was not unusual for the medical examiner's office to screw up a case. Weren't too many people there who could get a job anywhere else, and there were people working there who didn't belong there. Downright dishonesty was there." Pointing to people working there who didn't belong there, it should be noted that a root of discontent between Dr. Umberger, Ph.D., and Dr. James Luke, M.D., is noteworthy. According to an anonymous source, this author learned that the two men were party to a hateful feud, continuing after Dr. Luke left the medical examiner's office. According to the source, when Dr. Luke's competence became an issue in Oklahoma during a court hearing, Dr. Umberger testified, "The man isn't qualified to wash test tubes at any laboratory." Concerning Kilgallen's death, John Broich provided more insight, stating, "Dr. Luke loved headlines, loved to see his name in print. And Joe, Dr. Umberger, hated Luke." Finally, Broich said, "I remember there were some cloudy issues concerning who found the body and stuff like that. When Luke wrote 'circumstances undetermined' on the report, it meant he didn't really know what had happened." Broich also stated, "Regarding the certificate of death, it was most unusual for Dominic DeMeo to sign it for Dr. Luke, since he was deputy chief for Brooklyn, and Kilgallen died in Manhattan." Broich's disclosures trigger the question as to why Dr. Umberger and he did not divulge their findings in 1968 to either their superiors at the medical examiner's office, the NYPD, or perhaps even the New York DA's office. If accurate, these results could have potentially paved the way for an investigation of Kilgallen's death. Broich, like Dr. Umberger, blamed his conduct on office politics. But this excuse was less than truthful, as further evidence will indicate. Regardless, first, there had been no investigation. Now, there was an apparent cover-up of evidence, deliberately concealed by Dr. Luke, but then discovered by Broich and Dr. Umberger. Now these two men had hidden the truth. With regard to Kilgallen's manner of death, author Lee Israel had contacted Dr. Michael Baden in 1978, then chief medical examiner for the city of New York. He had worked at the New York City Medical Examiner's Office at the time of Kilgallen's death, and later became quite famous when he was involved in several high-profile celebrity cases, including John Belushi and O.J. Simpson. Dr. Baden was provided the raw data based on Dr. Luke's autopsy report without specifying the exact makeup of the raw data. Dr. Baden told Israel, "The percentage of barbiturate found in Dorothy's brain and liver indicated that the body reposited the equivalent of 15 to 20 100 milligram secanol capsules." Providing an opinion to this author was Dr. Donald Hoffman, a senior chemist in toxicology at the Medical Examiner Office, beginning in 1969. Apparently, examining the same raw data Dr. Baden scoured, Dr. Hoffman said Dr. Baden's estimate was reasonable. Elaborating, Dr. Hoffman added, "The formal data indicate that it was acute poisoning due to alcohol and barbiturates, and that the barbiturates alone could possibly have killed her." When this author interviewed Dr. Hoffman, an impressive intellectual, he was still teaching at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City at age 75. Dr. Hoffman, a member of the toxicological team at the NYC Medical Examiner's Office from 1969 to 1996, also called the techniques used in the Medical Examiner's Office crude during the early 1960s. Specifically addressing these techniques, Dr. Hoffman said they lacked the analytic sensitivity, specificity, and confirmatory nature available during later years. This damaged the reliability of testing, causing any conclusions to be questionable. After studying the available data, Dr. Hoffman agreed with the estimation that Kilgallen ingested the equivalent of 15 to 20 secanol capsules, while offering the conclusion that this amount pointed towards suicide or foul play. Most importantly, he said high barbiturate levels ruled out that the person had just taken one or two pills, but instead meant she had taken a lot more. Requested by this author to comment on the UV, or ultraviolet, numbers, 2.4 for liver and 1.6 for brain included in Kilgallen's autopsy report, Dr. Hoffman said they were significant, adding that the numbers were high and indicative that the screening tests used picked up significant amounts of the barbiturates. Dr. Hoffman added that the presence of both the secanol and tuanol caused there to be a lethal dose of barbiturates. When combined with the amount of alcohol in her blood, this condition, he surmised, triggered a serious threat to Kilgallen's health. Regarding the traces of nembutal, or pentobarbital, discovered by John Broich on the drinking glass that had been left on the nightstand next to Kilgallen's bed, Dr. Hoffman told this author, "This opens the door as how she came to ingest it. The presence of the pentobarbital itself on the glass clearly implies that she reasonably could have ingested a liquid containing this drug. If so, then how did she come to have it in the first place, since she was prescribed secanol? Could someone have put it in her glass unknown to her? If someone wanted to spike her drink, would he or she have just dropped in the capsules? Possible, but that assumes Kilgallen would have been too distracted to know. Risk for the perpetrator?" The drinking glass traces were highly significant to Dr. Hoffman, who told this author, "I can't get around this physical evidence pointing to a homicide, not accidental death or suicide." Asked to comment on the difference between someone ingesting a barbiturate capsule and the powder extracted when it was removed from the gelatin covering, Dr. Hoffman stated, "The only reason I can think of as to why a person would do that is if they thought the powder being dispersed in the liquid took effect quicker, absorbed into the person's system quicker." He added, "This would have to be done deliberately, not by accident, since you have to open the capsules. It could not be done accidentally, unless the person was highly under the influence of alcohol. But regardless, Combining the barbiturate with alcohol increases the danger moving in the direction of central nervous system failure. Dr. Hoffman told this author, Dr. Umberger was one of the founding fathers of forensic toxicology. Regarding John Broich, Dr. Hoffman said, he was an excellent toxicologist, sharp, had good intuitive knowledge. Dr. Umberger, John Broich, Dr. Michael Baden, and Dr. Donald Hoffman, credible in their own right, each concluded without hesitation that Kilgallen had ingested far more than the moderate amount of drugs Dr. James Luke specified in 1965. And neither John Broich nor Dr. Umberger believed Kilgallen died accidentally. While Broich failed to discuss this belief in the 1990s interview, a January 2015 audiotaped interview this author conducted with Broich's widow Eileen confirmed his allegations. Asked to describe the atmosphere in the medical examiner's office during the days preceding Kilgallen's death, Mrs. Broich said her husband told her it was mean-spirited. She added that John was quite emphatic when he said, "Some people felt threatened by others and wanted reports to be fudged regarding cause of death." From time to time, Mrs. Broich reported, people with influence and money caused fear to exist in the office. However, she said her husband and Dr. Umberger, a close friend of the family, were the exception to that rule, and instead were men of integrity, honest men who went by the book. Regarding Kilgallen's death, Mrs. Broich said her husband told her Dorothy was bumped off, the mafia term for killing a target. Asked by this author why she felt her husband kept secret his belief that Kilgallen was murdered, Mrs. Broich blamed paranoia in the medical examiner's office. With all of the forensic evidence in mind regarding Kilgallen's mysterious death, it is necessary to provide the most logical account of what happened during the wee hours of November 8, 1965, hours before Kilgallen's body was discovered. Doing so enables her death to be investigated in the same manner she would have executed based on her career as the premier crime reporter of her era.